So just switching on the recorder. And this is Stefan Sembrovich with Jadwiga Śliwińska, 5th of March, 2014. Jadwiga, tell us your life story, please.
Yes. I was born on the 26th September, 1939. The month and the year of the outbreak of the Second World War, when Germany attacked Poland from the west and the Soviets from the east. I lived with my parents, Jadwiga and Bronisław Priyonko, my brother Józef, known as Jutek, and my sister Maria, known as Marysia, in Chotów, near Nowogródek, Eastern Poland, on the estate of the Polish minister, Count Niezabitowski, where my father was employed as a forester. I was 5 months old, too young to recall the events, so I base my story on the recollections of my family, especially those of my late aunt Maria Kościukiewicz-Pagacz. When the Soviet troops entered Eastern Poland, anticipating the worst, my mother's family came to stay with us. They were my grandmother, Anna Kościukiewicz, aunts Maria and Janina, and my uncle, Konstanty Kościukiewicz, who was known as Kostek. And unfortunately, they all shared the Siberian hell with us. On February the 10th, 1940, in the middle of the night, we were woken by loud banging on the door. It was the Soviet soldiers with rifles pointed at my father, who burst in, searched the house for weapons, and told us that we are being arrested and that we should be ready to leave in less than 2 hours' time and to pack only clothing. Shock, fear, panic ensued. My siblings and I were dressed warmly.
What was the temperature then?
I'll tell you in a minute. Can I carry on?
Please.
My siblings and I were dressed warmly, wrapped in quilts and pillows. Some food was also packed in sacks. It was very cold, minus 40 degrees Celsius. And it was snowing when we were taken by horse-drawn sledges to a railway station in Stołpce, some 30 kilometers from Chotów. We were loaded onto a cattle truck with four other families already there. And then the door was shut and padlocked. Inside the truck was a metal stove in the middle, some rough benches at the sides, and a hole in the floor in a corner for a toilet. We traveled for 2 weeks without stopping or being let out. For drinking, we scooped snow through a small window in the roof, melted it on the stove, in which we burned bits of wood from benches or any other loose bits of wood. As the few handfuls of coal given soon ran out. The journey into the unknown was an absolute nightmare. Many people died on the way, the most vulnerable, the elderly, and the children. Finally, we arrived at Vozega station in Vologda, The children were placed in sledges, but the grown-ups had to walk in waist-high snow some 35 kilometers to their destination, barracks in the forest. And here, the NKVD, the Soviet secret police commandant, announced, "Here you will live and here you will die. And who does not work does not eat." We were given 300 grams of clay-like bread, some kipyatok, which is boiled water, and a lump of sugar. The next day, everyone was assigned work, mainly in the forest, to cut pine trees, strip them, strip the branches, and make them ready for floating on the River Volga. Hard work, meager rations, about 500 grams of bread per day, malnutrition, disease, inhuman living conditions, and the cold resulted in a high mortality rate. The very young children were sent to Yeshli, a Russian word meaning a nursery, and older ones, like my brother Zhutek, to Jetsad school, where they were indoctrinated in communist patriotism. And my brother Zhutek would come home singing the Soviet war songs. My sister Hanya was born in the camp. She died a few months later. It was winter time and the ground was frozen solid, so she was buried in the forest in a makeshift grave. But in spring, she was reburied and a wooden cross placed on her grave. That same spring, my sister Marisha and I became very ill, and fearing that we too may not survive, my father bartered a goat for his wedding ring in a nearby kolkhoz, which is a farming collective farm. And having the goat's milk aided our slow recovery. After a while, my aunt Maria, who was also known as Marisha, but usually we called her Chocha Marisha, started work in a bakery with a Soviet baker, a drunk, and when he was caught sleeping on the job, he was fired, and my aunt was put in charge. She managed to smuggle out bread and help many who were sick and could not work and therefore were starving. In springtime, people started small vegetable gardens in the forest. And amazingly, during a short summer, everything was growing fast. They also gathered some fruit like blueberries in the forest and made soup from nettles.
Of course. Yes.
Is that okay?
This is fine. The recording is good quality. We have good sound quality. And your voice is clear. So I'm very happy technically.
Oh, but what about the content?
And intellectually. This is a good story.
And the content is okay?
Well, the content is fine. Please continue.
I get sort of shaky and okay.
I'm very moved listening to it.
No, it is a very moving story.
Very moving story.
Yeah. And did I say that I was too young?
Yes.
I did. I did say that, yes. No, I think I missed it out.
You were a small baby, you said.
Yes, and it's you're better. Okay, we can start.
Let's resume.
Okay. In 1941 came the amnesty agreement between Sikorsky and Majewski, and we were free to leave the camp. News also came that the Polish army, under the leadership of General Anders, was being formed from the surviving prisoners and detainees, mainly in Uzbekistan. We decided to go to Uzbekistan because going back to Poland was impossible. Transport was organized by some enterprising Poles, and on the 10th of February 1942, we left the labor camp in similar tracks as before, but this time unlocked in the direction of Uzbekistan. Before leaving, my aunt managed to toast a lot of bread for the journey, of course, secretly. We traveled for 2 months and we reached Tashkent. It was spring already, so we bartered our warm clothes. But unfortunately, the rail authorities redirected our train and we headed back to Siberia in Siemapalatinsk. On the way, we encountered such snow and wind that the train was forced to stand for several days and nights. It was a terrible, disappointing freedom. At the last station, we were turned out of the train and told that there was no transport available for us to go to Uzbekistan. Few men bribed a station master who just gave 2 wagons, not enough room for everyone. My aunt only was offered a place because of her kindness and the help she gave to many in the camp. But she refused to go without us. So then Mr. Zarzycki, the main organizer, a widower with 3 small children, his wife died in the camp, decided to make room for us by leaving his sick mother and another elderly lady behind in a nearby hospital. In taking them to hospital, he missed our train, but fortunately caught up with us at the next station. Here, I must say, we owe him a huge debt of gratitude for his noble deed, and he probably saved our lives, and also my gratitude to my Ciocia Marysia, who throughout her life helped others and us. She was so kind and so selfless. Again, we were brutally unloaded in Kiziltepe, which was some 40 kilometers away from the town of Kirmine, where the 7th Division of the Polish Army was stationed. We bartered few possessions and arranged a transport to Kirmine, where we rented a room in an Uzbek's kibitka, which is a very primitive dwelling, and started to look for work. My brother Jutek and I contracted typhoid and were taken to hospital. In the meantime, another baby was born, my brother Tadeusz. But he died before he was 1 year old. He was buried in the sands of Kirmine. Kirmine in Uzbekis language means Death Valley. Our situation now was desperate, but thanks to Polish chaplain Father Krul, my aunt was given work as a cook in the Polish orphanage with 250 children. We three children were allowed to join her there, and also my mother and grandmother and my aunt Janina were given work to help out. Here, my father joined General Anders Army and was enlisted into the Polish Air Force, and to help out with the Polish Air Force cadets. And he was sent with them to Palestine, then Egypt, and in 1944 he came to Halton, England, with them. Also, my uncle Kostek joined General Anders' army here. On the 8th of August 1942, we left Kirmine, and from Krasnovodsk, a port on the Caspian Sea, we were shipped in terrible conditions with the soldiers to Pahlevi, Persia, which is Iran now, where we were quarantined. Then through Tehran to Ahvaz, and then from Karachi we sailed to Mombasa, Kenya, and onto the settlement camp in Masindi, Uganda.
Yes, okay.
Shall we stop?
Fine, yes.
Shall we stop now?
Yes, let's have a little applause. Yeah.
Any questions from there?
Uganda. Well, I'm writing down some of the names, and afterwards we can go through them, and I can make sure that I've got the spellings right.
If I've got the spellings.
I'm sure we'll work it out between us.
Yeah, because is it being recorded what we are saying now?
Yes, but it can be
erased. Yeah. Because I don't mention my aunt Janina, who joined the army, or should I mention her? Because then she went to Poland with her husband. But well, I may mention it somewhere.
We'll put in her. She is part of the story, so at some stage it would be good to put her in.
Yes, I'll put it probably later.
Yes,
okay.
Good.
I spent 6 years in Masindi.
Masindi.
Masindi, Uganda.
Yes.
From the age of 3 to 9. I remember it with great fondness. A very happy childhood and a wonderful adventure.
These are your first memories, of course.
Yes. I'm sure my mother felt differently. The camp was situated surrounded by jungle on one side and the savanna grass. We lived in mud huts with thatched roofs. The windows had no glass, only wooden shutters and the door. We slept on wooden framed beds with straw-filled mattresses under mosquito nets, and sometimes snakes would fall down at night onto the nets. We shared our living space with termites, rats, mosquitoes, flies, bedbugs, the lot. The clay floor needed constant maintenance, and it would crack and weeds would grow. So a layer of mud was smeared onto it from time to time, a chore which I relished. There was no electricity, only kerosene lamps and a small battery-operated torches. The kitchen and the toilet were in separate huts. The kitchen had a metal plate on bricks and was heated by burning wood, a bit like a barbecue. A toilet was a hole in the ground with a wooden platform for a seat. We had no running water and had to bring buckets of water from the tap situated in the center of the camp. Every night we would have a bathing ritual, usually outside in a tin tub. And Mother would inspect each one of us, especially our feet, for any infestations, as we loved to run around in bare feet. At first, I went to a nursery, then to school, which was from 8 o'clock in the morning to 1 in the afternoon. So, after school, we had plenty of time for ourselves. We also had to wear cork helmets against the sun. At first, the lessons were conducted outside in the shade, but later school buildings were erected, a hospital, and a beautiful church was built, which is still being used to this day by the locals. School was a happy time. I loved dancing and singing and would participate in many events to celebrate the national and religious days. I still remember all the songs I learned there. After school, with my friend Hania Dubitska, I would climb trees, follow the boys into the jungle, and sometimes jump over bonfires, coming home with singed hair and eyebrows. I was a real tomboy and generally causing mischief. I remember once being sent to bring meat for dinner from the distribution center. Of course, I decided to put it on my head in the fashion of the local women. A vulture swooped down and stole the meat, scratching my arm in the process. Occasionally, my friend Hania and my sister Marisha, we would stage shows of song and dance for our neighbors and collected few cents at the end. We kept pet rabbits, chickens, stray cats, and often my brother would bring injured animals and birds, and once he brought a monkey. Well, that proved too much trouble and caused mayhem, and my mother asked my brother to pass it on to somebody else. On one occasion, I remember, we were invaded by soldier ants. They came marching in huge columns, and we were very distressed when we could not save our pet rabbits. In the early evenings, my mother used to go to a community center to listen to the radio news about the progress of war. In 1945, news came, the war has ended. Jubilation. But our dreams and hopes of returning to Poland were shattered with the Yalta Agreement when Poland became part of the Soviet bloc. We were betrayed by our allies, unfortunately. Later, the Polish soldiers and their families were offered hospitality in the West, in USA, Australia, Canada, and Britain. In 1948, we left Masindi. It was a very sad time for us children, for we really were happy there. But on the other hand, we were excited at meeting up with our father. We left Masindi in lorries to Kampala. Then by train, we proceeded to Nairobi and to Mombasa, port in east of Africa. I remember the beautiful scenery and all wild, fantastic animals that we saw on the way. From Mombasa, we have to change this because it's getting a little bit.
Restart your paragraph or?
Yeah, because even where Yalta, I got so upset. Should I have explained what it was or not?
The Yalta Agreement, that's very much a matter of history.
Yes.
And, of course, history's in Yalta again now, isn't it? In the Crimea.
Yes.
As we speak.
So I'll start again. When we left, okay?
Yes.
In 1948, we left Masindi. We were very sad because we were happy there. But at the same time, we were very excited so that we would meet our father at last. We left by lorries to Kampala, then by train through to Nairobi. Again, I've got it wrong.
At this time, you were 9 years old.
Yes.
Yes.
Should I mention it?
That's fine. It'll be on the record.
Okay. And then through Nairobi and to Mombasa. On the way to Mombasa, we had beautiful scenery.
Yes.
We saw many wild animals in their natural surroundings. In Mombasa, we boarded the ship the Carnarvon Castle.
Carnarvon Castle, yes.
And we were overwhelmed at what we saw. There was running water, and I remember having cornflakes for breakfast. The voyage we enjoyed tremendously. We went we sailed through Suez Canal to the Mediterranean, Bay of Biscay, and we arrived on the 4th of May 1948 in Southampton, England. I remember feeling very cold and disappointed. Father was not there to meet us, and we were jealous of seeing all the other families being greeted by their fathers. From Southampton, we were taken to transit camp near Cirencester, and here my father, we had reunion with my father. Of course, we did not remember him. We were shy and awkward at first, and he didn't look anything like the photo that we had of him in Masindi. There he had dark hair, but here he was almost grey. My brother did recognize him. And I remember him bringing this small brown leather suitcase full of chocolates and sweets for us, which he collected over a period of time, because at that time everything was rationed. So, of course, we were thrilled with that. Later on, we moved to Melton Mowbray.
And again, you were in a...
In a transit camp.
In a transit camp.
Yes.
Were they called displaced persons camps, DP camps as well? Yes.
We are moved to displacement or whatever, displacement transit camp in Melton Mowbray. Here we lived in Nissan huts and went to Polish schools that were organized there.
Yes.
My sister got a place in a Polish boarding school in Stowell Park near Cheltenham. And my brother went to Polish boarding school for boys in Lilford, Northamptonshire. Can we stop?
Yes, of course.
Can you?
Okay, let's just...
You see, I get all carried away.
Hold on, now we'll... recording.
Shortly after my father was demobilized, he bought a house with my uncle Kostek, with the money saved during his time in the Air Force, and we came to live in Sheffield, where he found work in a steel factory. My mother kept lodgers, mainly acquaintances of my father from the time during the war, and some single young cadets. And they called my father Tesch, which means father-in-law, affectionately, because he had two daughters.
Right.
Now,
That's a little cheeky, isn't it?
Well, it was, I think, sort of, how shall I put it? affectionate way of addressing my father.
Yes.
And they never, they always addressed him as Tesch. Now, the rest of my relatives who were with us in Siberia and Africa joined us in Sheffield, except my aunt Janina, who joined the Polish army from Africa and came to Britain, got married, and they decided to go back to Poland.
They went back?
Yes, they went back. And she regretted it ever since.
What happened to her?
She lived near Kraków with her husband, because that's where he was from. But when she moved to Poland, she told my father that if she writes a letter in pencil, he must not consider returning to Poland.
Mm.
So that was a very good gesture on her part.
So she sent that secret message?
Yes, it was a secret message. Mm.
How soon did she know? How soon did she write back?
I think almost, I don't know, but it was when he was still in the Air Force. She wrote before we moved to Sheffield, because my father toyed with the idea
of going back
himself. Of going back, because he was worried what will happen to us here. We didn't speak any English.
Mm.
Jobs were hard to get. So he was toying with the idea of going back, although he was fearful that if he did go back, like many of the other people, he would be arrested again.
Yes.
So it was a secret message sent by my aunt for us not to
go back. Not to return.
Yes. Now this was all muddled. Now, I went to Notre Dame High School for girls, run by nuns, in Sheffield.
Yes.
The first year was traumatic, as I did not speak any English. But later, I was very happy there. Made friends, became a prefect in the sixth form, and chose teaching as my future career. My parents worked very, very hard, and at first things were difficult. But they immersed themselves in the Polish community, helping each other throughout. They also helped to establish and often to run the SPK or SPK Club, the Ex-Combatant Club, and later Polish Parish Center. They met and socialized there, attending dances, cultural events, celebrating the national and religious holidays. Church played a big part in their lives and in other Polish people's lives. And the Polish Mass was celebrated in St. Mary's Cathedral for years to come. I joined the folk dancing group and the Polish Girl Guides, taking part in many memorable trips and camps all over the country, which my parents would have not been able to afford. Is this okay?
This is perfect.
My family's history, their values and beliefs shaped their lives and in turn have shaped mine. My parents, my brother, and most of my close relatives are laid to rest in the Polish section of the cemetery in Sheffield.
Very good.
I'm sorry, this
we'll
is
just,
all.
We'll just pause here. There we are. Resuming.
In 1958, I went to Digby Stewart Roman Catholic Teachers Training College in Roehampton in London and specialised in secondary education, with biology my main subject. Life was fun in and out of college, of course. And I often frequented the many social events and gatherings held by the various Polish societies in various places, like Ognisko, a club in Elskot for the airmen, and Sailors Club in Chelsea, and so on.
There was a sailors club in Chelsea. Ognisko, I know.
No, Ognisko, yes, no. It's sailors club in Chelsea,
yes.
On the embankment.
Right.
Yes, and also Polish, Air Force club in Elskot.
Right, right.
Yes, and I think only Ognisko remains.
Yes, it's very much still there.
Yes, and also POSC, which is
in Hammersmith,
Polish Community Centre.
Yes.
In London, but many of those were sold. You see, some of the clubs were sold, and of course, regionally they had communities, and eventually bought churches. You know, like in Malham and Ealing. And so on. So it was very vibrant at the time and still is.
Yes, yes.
So where was I? I frequented many various Polish societies at different venues. And at one, I met my future husband-to-be. It was a dance organized by the Polish Student Association. When I qualified, but was still in college, I was offered a post to teach at St. Veronica's School in Bermondsey, a deprived area at the time. I readily accepted the offer after a very brief interview, not knowing that the school had quite a reputation for bad behavior and had difficulty in recruiting and retaining staff. It was a challenge. I stayed there for 12 years, becoming head of science, teaching mainly GCE O-level biology. I enjoyed my work and time at that school and was sorry to leave. I had a nickname there, a lion tamer. I still keep in touch with some of my former colleagues and few of former pupils.
Yes.
In 1962, I married Tadeusz Śliwiński. He was also deported to Siberia, but from Vilno, which is now Lithuania, and with his mother and sister, and spent the war years in a refugee camp in Valivade, India. His father, Valenty Śliwiński, fought with General Anders' Polish army. He was a warrant officer in the 2nd Corps Tank Division, Scorpioni, and took part in the battle for Monte Cassino. Tadeusz came to England in 1947. He went to a Polish boarding school in Bodisham, Cambridgeshire. Then to Portsmouth Polytechnic, where he obtained Higher National Diploma in Electrical Engineering. Later, he did an honours degree in Science and Technology at the Open University. He worked for Westinghouse Company in Semiconductors Research Lab in London. And in 1973, the company was relocating. And so we decided to move to Bristol after all those years in London. Our son Dariusz was born in 1974. He went to local school, then Bristol Cathedral School, and read pharmacy at Bath University. He is bilingual and was brought up to cherish his roots and maintain our cultural heritage. In Bristol, I gave up full-time teaching and for several years was involved in adult education, teaching GCSE biology and the Polish language. Born Polish and English, Could you wipe this?
Say it again. That's good.
Born Polish and English by adoption, I have the privilege to participate in the lives and activities of both the communities. I'm a member of the Polish parish, the SPK, our local Henley's Society, and the Anglo-Polish Society. And I will continue to cultivate closer links and a better understanding between the two communities and countries. I'm very grateful for having this opportunity to honor my family and those who have perished or were left behind in Siberia and other places in the USSR by the brutal aggression of Stalin, and also to remember and be proud of the sacrifices made by the Polish forces and the contribution and their contribution to European freedom and democracy. Amen.
Amen.
Sorry.
I can just hold it.
About India.
So Jadwiga, tell us about going back to Poland.
After we married, we took out British citizenship and we went to Poland, but we could not go to the part of Poland that we were born in because it's Belarus.
Yes.
So we only toured the rest of Poland, like Kraków, Warsaw, and so on. We spent about 3 weeks touring Poland, and we found it beautiful, but still very poor, and with some of the buildings had holes left by the bullets. But the hospitality of my family, especially my aunt Janina, who left England and went to Poland, and my husband's family was overwhelming. We were very moved. We also went to Częstochowa. And there was, at that time, they had a pilgrimage. All the youngsters walking from Warsaw to Częstochowa with guitars, playing hymns and other songs. And at the time, Cardinal Wyszyński was with them. It was very moving. The country was still under communist rule.
What year was this, roughly?
1965 yes. or 6.
Yes, yes.
And we joined them, and we were amazed at the spirit and, how shall I put it, the energy of the young pilgrims.
Yes.
And full of hope for the future.
Yes.
And hoping that they will be free of communists and would be able to travel abroad, because at that time it was still quite difficult.
Yes.
To get visas to come and visit other countries abroad. But it was amazing. We went also to the mountains, of course, to Zakopane. And generally, it was an emotional visit because our parents always brought us up to love Poland, cherish our roots and maintain our heritage. But I would say you appreciate something that you've lost much more.
Yes.
You don't take it for granted. And there is a poem by Mickiewicz who said, referring Litvo, Lithuania, well, that used to be part of Poland. Litvo, ojczyzno moja, ile cię cenić trzeba, ten tylko się dowie, kto cię stracił. In other words, you appreciate the things much, much more when you lose them.
Yes, yes, yes.
Is that too much?
That's fine. How do you find the new wave of Polish emigres, of migrant workers, as they're called now?
Well, they are different to us because we came here as stateless exiles.
You were called displaced persons, you were war refugees, you were aliens. You were actually referred to as aliens.
Yes, and could you stop? Well, usually we were told that we are stateless exiles.
Exiles, yes. Yes, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So what was the question? What do I think?
How do you find the new wave of emigres?
Well, most of them are very hardworking, young, full of hope, but, well, they are economical.
Yes.
They come here for work.
Yes.
And they can go to Poland if they wish.
Yes.
Or go on holidays and so on. And they work very, very hard. But they get more help than we did when we came.
Yes.
They get interpreters for them. They are helped with filling forms and even with benefits if they can't work. So that is the difference. But on the whole, I find them, well, as any other young person.
Yes.
Who wants to better their lives.
Yes, yes.
I can't think. You've got me there.
Okay.